Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. Today, my guest is Christine Bowman, who's a colleague of mine at Michigan State University and author of the book, Modern Sabbatical, A Step-by-Step Guide to Moving Temporarily to Another City or Country. In this episode, Christine shares how she and her family planned their sabbatical to Brisbane, Australia, and how that provided the inspiration for her book. I hope you enjoy the conversation and that you'll check out Christine's book. Hi, Christine. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Hey, Bethany. It's good to see you.
So I'm really excited to have you on for a few reasons. First, I can't wait to talk about your sabbatical in Australia. And second, we're going to be talking about the book you published, which breaks down all the steps to planning and taking a sabbatical away. But before Before we dive into talking about your sabbatical, would you mind just introducing yourself and telling everyone about your role at MSU and your research interests?
Absolutely. So I am jointly appointed as a professor of education policy and professor of law here at Michigan State University. I'm also the associate dean for academic and student affairs here in our wonderful College of Education, where I also get to know and work with wonderful people like you.
Awesome. Thank you. So let's get into your sabbatical. First of all, maybe tell us when it was, and then what led you to decide on Australia as a destination?
My sabbatical, which was really our family's sabbatical, so I think of it as our sabbatical, was in the first 6 months of 2019. And my partner is also a faculty member. And so he and I, for a long time, had been trying to sync up our sabbaticals so that we could go live in some other part of the world. We both love to travel a lot. And so when we got together, we kept traveling. And then when our son was born, we kept traveling still. So we've always really loved exploring different parts of the world and learning new things about people and cultures and places. So when we knew that we could sync up our sabbaticals, we had to try and figure out where we wanted to go. And there were a lot of considerations. But I think the primary ones were we wanted to be somewhere where we could both have beneficial research partnerships and collaborations. Mm-hmm. We also wanted it to be a good experience for our son, who was 7 years old at the time. And because we live in Michigan, I really just wanted to skip winter for 1 year. And so skipping winter was also high on the priority list. And actually, I should add, there was a fourth criterion as well. We live in a wonderful college town and wanted to have a bit more of a city experience. So it was thinking about all of those different factors and how they might work together. So we were thinking about, at one point we were talking seriously about Barcelona as well, but then really zeroed in on Brisbane. Definite match for the weather, mid-sized city. And then my partner has a colleague there who he had done some work with, and I found some really fantastic research collaborators there as well. And it was a pretty easy transition for my son because Australian school is pretty similar to American school in terms of curriculum.
Okay, great. And how did you all, so I feel like that's amazing. You made the stars aligned. You got your sabbaticals at the same time. You found a place that would work for all of you. And I love this, hearing the way you thought about the criteria that
you that the place needed to meet and how it was. When we were planning our sabbatical, weather was a big part of it too. My husband is happiest when it's like 80 degrees out or hotter. And so we didn't go to a very hot place, but we wanted to be somewhere with a more temperate climate than Michigan. And so, you know, part of thinking about like what makes you happy, what is the feeling you want to have on your sabbatical? So I love that.
Absolutely. And coincidentally, the winter that we were gone, and of course, we were in Southern Hemisphere, so seasons are reversed. It was summer for us. Brisbane weather is subtropical, so kind of like Miami. And that was the winter here when the polar vortex hit. And, you know, I was reading things on social media and on the news from home that were saying things like, don't let your dog outside for more than 2 minutes at a time or they might freeze to death. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I mean, really, there were stories about don't have your dog outside for very long because it was so harsh.
It's like the perfect sabbatical or perfect year to skip winter.
Oh, yeah. I didn't tell anyone back home how gorgeous the weather was, but it definitely, it helped me be incredibly grateful for the great weather we were having.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you all fund your sabbatical?
Yeah, really important question. Let's see. So I took a half year sabbatical. And so here at Michigan State, the arrangement is basically you can take a half year at no reduction in salary. So I was able to maintain my salary. My partner took a full year sabbatical, so he didn't go anywhere in fall. We were all home, and then we were away in spring. And so basically, you know, that was planning ahead and thinking about, do we have those funds? Where would we get those funds? You know, how can we adjust some things to make that possible? And then I also received some funding from the institution where I ended up as a visiting professor. Okay. So I had a formal appointment, and so did he. But in the department where I was formally appointed, they were able to cover my international airfare and, you know, provide a stipend that helped cover some of our living expenses. And it wasn't huge, but it was definitely helpful.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And then with things, logistical things, like did you guys need to get visas for your time in Australia?
We did. And I don't recall the details of how all of that worked right now, but I remember that it was a little more complicated than I anticipated it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's part of the reason we went to France, actually, is because it seemed like the least complicated visa getting process, which
I've heard that
because France is highly bureaucratic, but there were options that we could navigate on our own.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then, I mean, you write a little bit about this in your book, so I'm guessing you have experience renting your house out while you're on sabbatical. How did that work out for you guys?
So we will, if we have another sabbatical, I think we will not do that again.
Okay.
It works well for a lot of people, but didn't end up working that well for us, which was really frustrating. So again, I think just be thoughtful about who your tenants are. But I will say, you know, some things that I appreciated, we were in touch with all of our neighbors to let them know that we would be gone, other folks would be there. And we enlisted various neighbor kids in doing things like kind of taking care of the garden, which just basically meant cutting down the tulips when they die and some stuff like that. So a lot of folks were pitching in and keeping an eye on things for us, which was really helpful.
That's great, especially when you're so far away. I mean, I think you're in Australia, you can't kind of pop back to check on things. So it's good to have your community keeping an eye on things for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how was it for your son? He was 7 and you said that the school experience was kind of similar to the US, but I'm sure there was also some adjustment for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at what point did you loop him into the planning process and then how did it all go for him?
So I don't remember exactly when we looped him in, but it was a while in advance. So maybe at least a year in advance or something. So he knew that this was coming up and this was happening. And, you know, we looked at all sorts of pictures and started learning things about Australia. And then we knew where he would be attending school. He went to the local public school and we were in the catchment area. So we could look on the map and say, okay, so these are pictures of the house we'll be renting, and these are pictures of your school, and you'll have to wear adorable little uniform. just so he could start to visualize it. And he was super excited about it up until maybe a month before we left. And then he started getting incredibly nervous, which makes sense. Yeah. And so as we were leaving, you know, we made sure that he had some special time together with some of his good friends. And then I also asked my fellow moms moms of his friends to record some little videos that he could watch when he got sad. And so he had a couple of little videos of his closest friends who were just, you know, wishing him luck and saying how exciting this was, and, you know, telling him to, you know, just be courageous, and they wanted to hear all about it. And so that was really great. When we got there, it was mid-January, and that was the winter school break in Australia. And so we enrolled him in some day camps that were happening at the school where he would be attending, so he mm-hmm. could start to get to know some kids. And so the first day, he met a bunch of kids who were his classmates and became familiar faces. And so that was really great. But the first day in particular, this one little boy sat down next to him and they just started chatting and they just hit it off, and they are still friends. So it's really lovely. Awesome. And they ended up being in the same class. And so it was fun. And I want to say, you know, the first couple of weeks in Australia were hard for him. He really missed home. It was rough.
Yeah.
And then I think when school started, and especially when he realized that he, in fact, with his American accent, was going to be very popular at school because of all of the TV and movies that that folks in Australia watch that are filmed in the U.S. So, you know, they have American accents. So when he started getting a sense of how things were going to go at school, he became a lot happier. And that was good for all of us. And then at the end of the semester, so in late June, we invited his class to join us for kind of a going away play date at a local park. And so people, we'd gotten to know a lot of parents just kind of at drop off and pickup time and stuff like that. And so a lot of folks brought their kids who'd really gotten to know Quinn. And that was a lot of fun. It was really neat.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's the getting kids settled in. I didn't realize this, but I actually did a podcast episode with my son asking him about his experience on our sabbatical. He's 10, so he was in fourth grade when we went on sabbatical, and I didn't realize that making friends was his biggest fear. I should have known. I should have expected that, but he's a kid who's very good at making friends, so it surprised me. But then, you know, his advice to kids is like, it's not, don't be nervous, you'll make friends, it'll be fine.
That's great.
So it's so fun to hear about Quinn's experience and hear that it worked out well, and he made a long-time friend. So that's
absolutely
an exciting outcome.
You know, and it was interesting with school because in terms of, so the school year in Australia starts in January. And so so Quinn did the first half of second grade twice, once in the U.S. in the fall, and then once in Australia in the spring. So over the years, we have realized various things that are covered in the second half of American second grade. Yeah. Like apparently that's when kids learn the months of the year and the order that they go in and the seasons that go with each month. So in various funny situations, we've realized that was a gap.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is they survive and it's kind of a pun. It's like, oh, I was in Australia, so I didn't quite get that.
Yeah.
So when you guys, as a family, remember your time in Australia, is this something where now you sometimes sit down at dinner and you're like, oh, remember this in Australia? Like, what are the things that stick out, you know, 5 years later?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. So it's hard to know where to start. So what are some things that we talk about? You know, sometimes it's just small things that will set us off laughing. Like one day I was picking Quinn up from aftercare at school, and he had two other good friends who he'd gotten to know who were there, and we'd spent time with those kids and their family outside of school as well. And so their mom knew that we didn't have a car and we were just going to walk home, I don't know, like 6 blocks or something. But she said, oh, you know, I think it might rain. Would you like a ride? And we said, sure. And so we were all in her minivan and we were talking about things like, you know, we were asking them, what are your stereotypes of Americans? And so they were doing American accents and then had us. And for some reason, we ended up talking about water bottles, and it was the accent. It was the vowel in water bottle. And we all, like Quinn and I, were trying to say water bottle in an Australian way. And we were clearly doing it somehow very, very wrong. And they were just dying laughing, and they were trying to say it, you know, with a kind of a standard or a Midwest American accent. And we were just absolutely in tears. So, you know, it's those funny little everyday things that you just remember this moment of joy and connection and discovery. And so one of us can just say water bottle to the other or
what's a bottle.
And then we're just laughing. But yeah, you know, and then so little things like that, but bigger, amazing things too. You know, we went to Uluru and we were there for my partner's 50th birthday. And so we were riding camels through the desert at sunset and it was just unreal. It was amazing. Yeah. So a lot of different things that really made it incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what a fun thing to be able to explore things together as a family and have new experiences or, you know, new challenges. I remember my kids' school in France, I wasn't quite sure whether they had a uniform. You know, I thought they did, but I didn't really know. And so the kids would ask me things and I was like, you know, guys, we're just going to have to figure it out together. And so for the kids to suddenly realize, oh, my parents know a lot of things, but they don't know everything about, you know, this new place that we're going to. And so it was really a good learning experience for all of us to say, like, we can go into a situation and not know everything and we can figure it out, even though, you know, sometimes we get lost or take the wrong bus line and end up where we didn't think we would be or, you know,
any number of things. You know, and living somewhere is different than just visiting somewhere. And I love sort of the sense of connection that you can have when you're living there. And, you know, we were only there for half a year, but we dove in, right? We said, this is home for the time that we are here. And so we developed our own traditions and we had, you know, the first place where we happened to go for sushi became our sushi place. Right. Nice. And so little things like that were really neat.
Yeah, that's great. So on the flip side of that, what can you think of what the most challenging aspects of either the planning or taking your being on sabbatical away from home were?
Time zone was definitely a challenge because, of course, Australia is about 12 hours different than than Central and Eastern time zone in the US. So just keeping in touch with folks and when we were going to be able to talk with family synchronously, that was definitely a challenge when we were there. In terms of planning, I think so it was interesting. I was trying to figure out how we would be able to have money there and open a bank account and things like that. And so when we were planning that, there was one, because I also was looking into this and it looked like even if we were to bring a check and deposit it into a new account in a new bank, there would be some length of time before we would have access to that money. Yeah. And so it was this knowledge that, okay, we would have rent and we would need to pay for that, you know, that day camp that started pretty soon after we got there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, groceries, you can use credit card for some things, but not for things like that.
Yeah.
At least for, actually, yeah, we couldn't use credit card for the day camp or aftercare at school,
right,
or for rent. And so those were some big expenses. So I ended up figuring out one bank that would allow foreign nationals to open an account basically before they were moving there. And so we were able to get that up and running. But I was surprised that it seemed like that was a pretty unusual sort of practice. Okay. So I remembered just thinking about, you know, so strange to think about how are we going to have access to this money? And yet, you know, we were traveling for a couple of weeks on our way there through Southeast Asia. And if we had been going direct, I would have been more comfortable carrying a larger amount of cash.
Yeah.
But given that we were traveling around for a couple of weeks, that was not something we wanted to do. So yeah, that was definitely a challenge. And then again, just getting settled and our son sort of getting acclimated and finding his new normal and all of that. So that was definitely a transition time.
Yeah.
When we got through it, it was great, but it was tough while we were in it.
Yeah, I was just paging through your book and there is I just found it. Paul Thoreau quote. It says, "Travel is only glamorous in retrospect."
Yes, exactly.
And I was just thinking that resonates with me so much because we would have so many. I mean, my daughter, so she started kindergarten twice. She started kindergarten in France and then we came back in January and she made the transition here in Michigan.
Oh,
and
amazing.
The number of mornings that she would have a complete meltdown in the entryway of our apartment and, you know, we're like dragging her out of the building, kicking and screaming. And my husband would just say, this trip is going to age well. Like we're all going to remember it fondly. And we do, but sometimes there are those moments that you're like, why are we doing this? It is so much harder than if we had stayed at home.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. So can I ask you a bit about your sabbatical?
Yeah, sure.
So where were you in France and how did you decide to be at that location in particular?
We lived in Bordeaux, and which was lovely, but we'd never been there before. So was this the case for you in Brisbane that you planned to live there, but when you showed up, that was the first time you had been there? Or had you been there before?
Close. So actually a couple years before that, I had a conference in Brisbane and we were so excited about this idea of a family sabbatical that I said to my husband, you know, I know sabbatical is still a few years away, but like Brisbane might really work for us. So why don't you come along and we can just check out the city a little bit. But I mean, honestly, being there for 1 week, that was about it.
Yeah.
So,
kind of a crazy thing, right? To just say, you know, pick a point on a map and let's go.
Yeah.
But the reason we ended up there, I may have told you this before, at first when I started planning, I thought I would go to Tanzania because that's where I do research. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that wasn't really what I needed kind of personally and professionally. I needed actually to kind of rest and recover a little bit more. And it's harder to do that in Tanzania where even though I would have, you know, more connection with colleagues there, I'd also get pulled into more new projects, and I kind of needed to just analyze data and write and finish projects as opposed to starting new ones. So we also thought about it like a family sabbatical. My husband was able to work remotely for one semester. So we spent one semester in France, and then the second half was here in Michigan. I think I settled on Europe because I thought, well, this would be a fun adventure for our family. It seemed, and I was looking for places that were kind of a small city with good public transit, because we also didn't want to have a car. A place where we could find a school for the kids that was, we thought we probably were not going to live in an Anglophone country, but it was a short enough time that we thought we'd like a bilingual school or an English speaking school. So it didn't have to, you know, there wasn't a language adjustment on top of being in a new place. And then just, I mean, I just looked at like apartments and Airbnbs to try to see if things would be affordable. So where could we kind of like keep the cost of living similar to what our cost of living is here? So I came up with Lisbon, Valencia, and Bordeaux as kind of my options. And then Bordeaux won out because it was the easiest place to get a visa. And since I didn't have an institutional affiliation, we were doing that all on our own. So to get a visa in Spain, we would have had to get all of our documents officially translated, and there were these huge fees. So anyway, so it ended up being, it was perfect. We loved it. It was just the right size. The kids were at this tiny bilingual school, and they made friends. You know, by the end, my son, Danny, his best friend, Sasha, you know, he's in this tiny class. There were like four kids in his class, but he and Sasha really hit it off. And on the way, he had been very sad about missing friends from home throughout the semester. And then we were on the TGV from Bordeaux to Charles de Gaulle on the day we were flying out. And he said, "I miss Sasha already," you know?
Aww, so,
anyway, it's become a really special place for our family. And I think we picked it. There was some intention, but not with a whole lot of, you know, it was more like, where can we make all of the logistics work out?
Absolutely. It's a Venn diagram, many circles.
Many circles. Yep. And then I think I had a moment of panic a couple weeks before we left thinking, I don't actually know anything about Bordeaux, except for, you know, what I've like read online or I've looked at pictures. So I hope this is going to work. I had studied abroad in France, so I had some sense of it, but I ended up turning my husband into a total Francophile, which I was not expecting.
That's great.
It's amazing how transformative for the entire family, I think the experience was too.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your book. Your sabbatical inspired you to write a book called Modern Sabbatical, A Step-by-Step Guide to Moving Temporarily to Another City or Country. Tell me more about the book and how it came to be.
So I am a planner. I am a systems thinker and I'm a planner. And so as I was doing all of this work, I was also all this work to plan a sabbatical abroad. Yeah. I was also doing research to say, you know, are there lists? Are there, you know, who's written about this? And I found that there was a book that someone wrote in the mid 80s and then updated maybe a decade later or so. And that was about it. And I thought, oh, this is crazy. You know, it should not be that people who want to live abroad for a short time should have to reinvent the wheel so much. And yet it seems that that's exactly what's happening. And so I just kept a lot of notes as I was going through the process of planning the sabbatical. And then during the sabbatical, I started writing this up and continued writing after we got home. So really, the idea is to have a narrative description. And each chapter is focused on a particular issue or a particular aspect of sabbatical. And then it also breaks it down into what you should do, you know, 1 month before your sabbatical, mm-hmm. or 2 months, 6 months, 1 year, and for some things, even up to about 2 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then I collated all of those to-do lists at the end so that it's just this big old list that starts with 2 years ahead, what you might want to start doing. And so it was really interesting for me to go through the process of writing that. And it was really also just getting down everything that had been in my head that whole time. So the book is also just a window into my brain. So
well, I love it. I'm a planner too. And so this was one of the, you know, I remember Alyssa Dunn told me about this book. And so when I, because she had found it and she was like, kind of like as if it were this secret. Like, did you know Christine Bowman wrote this book about planning a sabbatical? And because she had hoped to go abroad for her sabbatical, but then wasn't able to because of COVID. But I'm also extremely type A. So I just love all of the lists in this. You know, it's a little overwhelming to think that some of this you have to start several years in advance.
Yeah.
But it's also good to know, especially, you know, the funding timelines, for example.
Right.
For like Fulbright, you really do have to apply a year before.
Yeah. And I also want to say that there's a lot of flexibility in this too, right? You know, the stuff that's a couple of years ahead of time is, you know, some of it is things that are not flexible, like mm-hmm. Fulbright grants. Those are only open for application at a certain time every year. And so you miss that window, then you miss that opportunity. Yeah. But a lot of it really was starting to think about different things and explore ideas and opportunities. And also in terms of the suggested timelines, a way to say to people, basically, if you try to do all of this in the month before you go, that's going to be insane.
Yeah.
But what are some ways, how could you stretch it out a little more in a way that makes it all more manageable? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some things folks will need to do. Everyone will need to have housing wherever it is their sabbatical is.
Right.
But that can look like so many different things, right? You know, some people might be living with family. Some people might be renting a furnished home. Some people, you know, there could be all sorts of other options as well, you know, especially if someone is on more of a mobile sabbatical where they're mm-hmm. in places for maybe just a week, then that's going to look really different for housing than if you're going to stay somewhere for 6 months.
Right. Yeah. How did you guys find housing for your sabbatical?
Sabbaticalhomes.com.
Yeah.
And so the family that we rented from, they had recently retired and they had an old Queenslander house, which is basically it's a largely open one floor plan. Mm-hmm. And what they had done was the house was built into a hill. And so they had taken the lower floor, and which was an exposed lower level, and they totally renovated that. So it was a standalone guest area with, you know, a couple of bedrooms, a couple of bathrooms, and it just opened into their backyard and it had a separate entrance as well. And while they were doing all of this, they also put in a little swimming pool. And so that was also a big selling point for my son.
Yeah.
And I said, we're going to live in a house with a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And so he thought that was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool too, frankly. I've never lived in a house with a swimming pool.
I know.
And especially since it was someone else's pool. So we didn't have to maintain it. It was really, best of all worlds.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. Sabbaticalhomes.com is great. I think what I learned from scouring those listings is there do tend to be like clusters in certain areas. And so, I was hoping for that. We couldn't find anything on there for Bordeaux, but we found an agency that does like furnished apartment rentals. So you pay, you pay a little bit more, but you don't have to worry about anything. And it's a little, and it was less expensive than Airbnbs because an Airbnb would have just been exorbitant for that amount of time.
Absolutely.
So about your book, what's your kind of, as you think about the sabbatical planning process, what are the one or two pieces of advice that you would most want to give folks who are planning a sabbatical and they want to go away? You know, and it doesn't have to be abroad. I think, you know, it's aptly named, you say, like moving to another city or country, because some people might decide mm-hmm. to relocate within their home country for their sabbatical.
Yeah. So on one hand, I think I would say don't underestimate the amount of time and logistics and complexity that goes into all of this. It's kind of a slog to do all of it, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And it can be so worth it. And so actually, as I wrote the first draft of this, I shared it with a colleague in Australia, who he and his family had done a sabbatical coincidentally in France. And he read it and he came back and he said, and I, my Australian accent's terrible, so I won't even try. But he basically said, okay, Christine, like you've covered all of the things. This is really good. But it's also kind of depressing because this is such a massive amount of work. And he said, and I agree, like it is a massive amount of work. Yeah. So, you know, so what can you do to also get across the idea that it's worth it? And so Matt McDonald gave me that wonderful feedback. And also, he gets credit for the great idea of interspersing before every chapter, either, you know, if I could get them, sort of vignettes from mm-hmm. friends who had been on sabbatical that just give you a window into their experience and why it is so worth it. And sometimes a couple little travel quotes mixed in as well. But yeah, Matt's inspiration was to say, yes, you know, you also need to help people understand that it's worth it to go through all of this hassle.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I've thought about that many times before and since my sabbatical. I can't even begin. I wouldn't even know how many hours I spent on the planning. It's a lot. And I did that for our family, but I also kind of in a different life, I think I would have been a travel agent. So I secretly kind of love it. But then you're also kind of like,
we need to hang out more, Bethany.
Okay. Yes. I want to hear what's next on your list of places to go. Cause I think one of the things that for us has been exciting about traveling with our kids, and we always have, but this was kind of the first, going to Europe with our kids was just a little bit different than other places we've traveled. And like my son is really into Percy Jackson and Greek and Roman mythology. So it was really fun to go to Rome with him or just be in Europe. And he'd be like, oh, I think that's a statue of Athena. Or I think those are like Greek gods and goddesses on the Bordeaux Opera House. I'm like, yeah, I think you're right about that. And so it's eye-opening and I think has encouraged us to, you know, think more expansively about where we want to go with the kids and not feel as limited by their age, I guess, in terms of our travel. So, well, Christine, it was so fun to talk to you about your sabbatical and about your book. Where can folks find your book?
A couple of places. One is on Amazon. And so again, it is Modern Sabbatical is the title of it. You can either get it as an ebook, or if you want to order a print copy, you can have access to that as well. And then additionally, I have uploaded it on SSRN.com. And that stands for Social Science Research Network.com. And so you can also get a free copy of it there. And I'm not sure if the ebook is free or not. But anyway, it's not too much if there is a cost attached to it. So yeah. Those are a couple of options.
I think I just looked it up today on Amazon. It's like $13. So it's definitely worth having the hard copy, especially if you want to go through those lists and work through it. And I'll put a link in the show notes too, so everyone can find it easily.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks so much, Christine. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to talk with you.
You too. I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical.
If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.